Memories are such crucial parts of our lives, of our stories. You know, in such a profound extent, we're really shaped and formed by the people that our memories create us to be. And there can be all kinds of wonderful moments in those memories, things that really stand out for us, moments that shaped us, that formed us. For the married couples, perhaps it was, you know, that first time you set eyes on your beloved. Or maybe it wasn't such a happy memory. Maybe you thought they were this obnoxious piece of work or something like that, but slowly over time you began to realize, you know, how wonderful that other person was. Maybe it was, you know, an occasion in church, some moment when you realized that, hey, this isn't just a load of old stories. There's this wonder, there's this truth, there's this life in all of this. And for me, that's one of the memories that has, you know, really shaped me. The first time that I realized that Jesus was not just a character on a book in history, but he was real. It was this moment when I could encounter him personally. It's actually the anniversary of that moment for me today, back in 1986, when I was in year 12, and when I realized at the end of the Antioch weekend that, hey, you know, this is all true, this is all real, and I made a commitment to walk with him, to follow him. You know, and that moment, that memory has been really seared into my heart and into my life. But sometimes there are those other memories, and sometimes it's things that really evoke those memories that can be most painful. There's only two mentions of a charcoal fire in the scriptures. The first one in the Gospel of John is a few chapters earlier, when it's during the night of the trial of Jesus before his passion, or as his passion begins and unfolds. And Simon Peter and the disciple that Jesus loved, because he knew one of the servants on the gate there at the court of the high priest. And so they were allowed to come into this little courtyard. And there's a charcoal fire burning, and they go and warm themselves by the fire to keep away the darkness, to keep away the cold. And when some of the servants begin to recognize that Simon Peter was one of the followers of Jesus, and they ask him those, you know, questions three times. Are you the one that, surely you're one of the disciples, surely your accent gives you away, surely you're one of the faithful ones. And each time, of course, no matter how much Peter had made that declaration earlier that even if all the others fall away, I will never leave you, I will always be there with you. But of course, he denies Jesus three times. So when they're here again on the shore, after a fruitless night of fishing, we don't know why they've gone back fishing, why they've returned back to that previous occupation that had caused them so much grief in the first place. But maybe it was just that sense of just at least something familiar in the midst of all of these crazy things that are happening, that Jesus that they saw was clearly dead, suffering on the cross, and yet here he is walking among them, able to eat, able to be with them, able to offer the mercy and kindness of the Lord. And so Simon Peter is clearly overwhelmed by this whole experience. We're told that on the boat that he's taken most of his clothes off. When the Greek actually says he's naked, but that sense of he's unencumbered by, because he's wanting to be free to work. But then when he sees Jesus on the shore, rather than just jumping into the water and going the 100 meters to the shore, he wraps this cloak around him. If you're just about to jump into the water, you don't normally put on more clothes. And yet it's again a reminder of what's happening here. That Simon Peter is still feeling so overwhelmed by his sin. But just as back in the garden, that when the first man and the first woman the human one, Adam, and life, Eve, are there, and after they recognize and realize that they have sinned, they clothe themselves. Before that, they're naked without shame, but now they realize that they need to cover themselves up. They need to have some protection. They need some wall, some barrier that they can hide behind. How often have we done the same? How often have we put up something to try and pretend that we're not here, that there is something that we can at least create some barrier, some occupation that can prevent us from being so vulnerable and so exposed? But when they come onto the shore, there is Jesus. He's already got some fish. He's already been fishing that morning. He didn't need the 153 large fish that the disciples caught that night. He already has enough. There's bread and there's fish cooking on the fire. And yet, what kind of fire is it? It's a charcoal fire again. And so Simon Peter would have been, you know, overwhelmed by the scent and the smell of the charcoal, by the smell of the fish cooking there. All those memories would have been seared deeply into his whole psyche. He would have, you know, been able to really remember that moment, that experience, and the shame that it stirred up, that whole sense of being overwhelmed by all of those memories of failure, all those times when he had made those declarations of bravado that he will be the one that will protect Jesus, he will never leave him, he'll never forsake him. And yet in this moment, Jesus realizes that Simon needs something more than just the forgiveness that he'd already extended to all of the disciples. All of them had fallen away, all of them had run away, but Simon needed something specific. So that's when they make their journey. They begin their walk along the shore of the lake. And Jesus begins to ask these questions. And the Greek is actually quite interesting in the different words that happened. There's different words in Greek for that experience of love. And so when Jesus says, do you love me? Do you agape me? Do you offer the fullness of yourself? Are you able to really make that commitment to me? And the first answer is that Simon Peter gives is, yes, I'm a friend of yours. I love you with that gift of friendship. And the same in the second time. But in the third time, Jesus lowers himself. He simply asks Simon, will you be a friend of mine? That third love is the love simply of friendship, philia, of that experience of really being embraced by that friendship. And Simon is able to say with an absolute declaration that, yes, I will be your friend. It's a beautiful moment of restoration, a beautiful moment of renewal. The Lord is always there for us. When we have those memories that haunt us, those things that hold us back, those things that all that we experience is that sense of guilt and shame, that we're not able to be free from those moments, the Lord wants to reach back into those memories and to bring his healing, to bring that restoration, to allow us to be able to recognize that there is nothing in this moment that prevents me from following the Lord. And it's beautiful that the gospel concludes with that instruction, that invitation, that commandment to come follow me. The Lord's always inviting us to continue this journey, even though we get it wrong, even though we stuff it up, even though so often our memories are of moments of darkness, moments of despair. The Lord wants to bring healing to all of those so that we can indeed take our proper place among the community of the faithful followers, among all those who've also made mistakes, who've also got it wrong, who's also been unfaithful in their love. And the Lord is inviting us all into a deeper encounter so that we can be free from those memories that haunt us, that we can be free to serve him, that we can be free to love. So let's indeed allow the Lord to lead us along the shore and to invite us more deeply into that encounter with his love as we serve him, as we surrender, and as we make that invitation to love, to be forgiven, and indeed to follow the Lord each day of our life.